Nebraska's defense couldn't get a stop on third down, and Purdue would go on to win Saturday 31-27. The return of Adrian Martinez did very little to help a struggling offense find points when it mattered. We'll break down the loss and look ahead to what the Huskers can do during the bye week with our special guest, former Husker Blake Lawrence. Sean Callahan will be ahead, of course, with updates on Big Red recruiting. It's all coming up next on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. Hi, everyone. I'm Michael Sevier. Welcome to NET's Big Red Wrap-Up. It was another game where Nebraska found a unique way to lose the game. Joining me tonight to talk more about it, former Huskers Jay Moore and Damon Benning. We talked a lot about this, Damon, of course, for a couple days now. It was a unique way. I mean, Nebraska did everything they should have done to win the game, but yet somehow they lost it.
Yeah, anytime you block a couple of punts, you have darn near a pick six, you leave multiple points out there on the field, and four drives, give up over 300 yards defensively. Your other eight were pretty good. It's a lot of anomalies in this one, but it has been a little bit of a pattern in terms of finding ways to lose. Yeah.
Blackshirts did enough, especially in the first half, kind of on the offense to get some points there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can go back to the Colorado game. They did enough. A lot of these games where they get off to big leads, they did enough. Any of the offense can't capitalize, or the defense kind of trips up in third down situations. A lot of inexcusable mistakes in the ninth game or the 21st game of the staff. You know, you take care of the football. You're plus one in the turnover category. You get the blocked punts, as Damon referred to. Ball in the plus category, in the produced part of the field. You don't get too many points. You only get 3 points after a pick six. 10 penalties to 3 penalties. That's even, you know, Nebraska only had 3 penalties. Purdue was literally trying to give them, like, here, we're going to keep roughing the passer, or, you know, personal, whatever it is, the pass interference on fourth downs. Saying, here is the game. You guys take it and win it. And Nebraska still couldn't do it. I just telling people, whoever, people asking me, trying to vent to me, and I vent to them. With this football team right now, if it isn't one thing, it's another. And it's very puzzling through 21 games of Scott Frost's tenure.
Now you figure out a way to hold the locker room together during this bye week?
Yeah, I think that's, and I don't know where they're at with leadership, but it's no more important than it is right now, because it's easy to listen to critics, and misery loves company, and sometimes you're going to find places where you think you can get some solace, and some people are going to support some negative opinions. So it's important for those guys to hunker down together. Right now, it's not about anybody else. It's about them. And by them, I mean the 150 guys and that coaching staff, and they've got to find a way to kind of band together. It's more about the camaraderie for the fight that's going to happen outside than anything that you want to be a fight on the inside. And now there's no time like the present.
We'll talk more about what happened in the game, but we can't do the show without you. The guys from Phi Kappa Theta are here with us, ready to take your calls this evening while they're enjoying some Valentino's pizza. Do not eat Damon's pizza. He was very upset. Let's make sure that we get everything covered tonight. Our NET Sports intern, Hannah, is here as well to help us. We'll hear from her in a bit. Also, if you feel comfortable emailing, texting, you can, of course, go to bigred@netnebraska.org to send us an email. And you can reach out via social media. Eyes are peeled to Facebook and Twitter pages. Of course, wanting your comments, we'll have those questions to the guys tonight. Here's the results of last week's sideline survey. We asked you who you would start at quarterback for the final four games. Adrian Martinez, the likely answer at 66%. Noah Vedral at 25%. And Luke McCaffrey, who didn't even make the trip because he was injured, at 9%. Let's go to this week's new sideline survey. What's been the most disappointing aspect of 2019 so far? Is it the offense, the defense, special teams, or coaching? Surprisingly, offense is at 43%. I thought special teams would be one that would, you know, dominate this one, but maybe they remember just what happened last week. Defense at 29% and coaching at 27%. Of course, go to the website to cast your vote. What's the answer to that question?
All the above.
Okay. E.
Yeah.
Kind of cheap.
Everything's been disappointing to me so far through nine games this year. I think everyone's at fault. You know, offense, defense, special teams, coaching, all four aspects, all four phases, they got to get better. And there's no other, you know, there's no other way to put it.
Yeah, I think for me it's always, and I know this is what you try to do, you remember it's a team game. And the players know what they're being taught versus what's being executed. And somewhere in there, there's the middle. And everybody always wants somebody to pick a side. Well, it's their fault or it's this guy's fault. And listen, where we come from in a team sport, it is everybody that's got some skin in the game. That's coaches, that's strength and conditioning staff, that's the players, that's all three phases of the game. There's plenty of ownership to go around.
Sure. 47-yard line, 49-yard line, 46 and 2-yard line. Those are your first six drives or so. Nebraska's starting four of those in plus territory. They only get 10 points in the first half. That's something you can point to. I know Scott Frost pointed to that after the game.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's maddening. It drives you nuts thinking about their opportunities. I mean, it should have been 21-7 at half. You know, it could have been 21-0 at half.
It should have definitely been at least 21-24.
Right. I mean, this team has been given so many opportunities, and they just can't grasp them, can't capitalize on them, can't take advantage. You can just go back to, I mean, you look at the three leads that they've given up, you know, like you have Colorado, Indiana, and then this game. So many, you know, you get one more score here, you get one more score there, you get just one stop defensively, mm-hmm. and you win the football game, and all of a sudden, four and five is now 7-2. And how that changes the perspective and how people's outlook are right now. It's never as good as it is, as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. And that's kind of a tone right now for this team. There's a lot of things they can do differently. It's close. It's close, but it's the little things and the details with this football team. I've been saying it all year. It's shot them in the foot so far through the season.
2-6 team you're playing right there. You go up 17-0 on that team.
Yeah, it's all she wrote.
Probably.
And it's interesting because losing, like anything else, is a habit. And it's not necessarily muscle memory that dominates, but it's what's in your head. It's the emotional psyche and the baggage that you kind of bring with you. And at some point, Nebraska's got to stop talking about the coulda, shoulda, or the woulda, mm-hmm. and be focused on the doing. The key thing for this team, and maybe it sounds easy just from where I'm sitting, but it's all about staying in the moment. Their ability to get kind of outside of themselves or to be reminiscing about a game ago or two games ago or two plays ago or a quarter ago, they're not to a point where they can lose focus like that. And I think for them, it's not necessarily that the objects in the rearview mirror are closer than they appear. It's more like keep your eyes on the road. And when you're kind of handling this kind of vehicle known as Nebraska football, that's really all you're afforded to be able to do.
There's a great quote from Jim Moore that says, you think you know, I'm sure you think you know, but you just don't know. Here's an email from Jim asking about number 7, Barry. He says he runs himself out of plays. For example, the final Purdue touchdown. I've seen this all season. We don't really know a lot of times when we're watching the game as a fan whose responsibility that is in a play. On that final play, on the end around, mm-hmm. was that Mo Barry at fault?
He gets action down. I mean, I haven't
drawn this play.
Yeah, they get action down. This is what's puzzling. You can go back to the Indiana game. They had this issue. The backside contained player, who is it within this defense? You see in this situation, I believe it's JoJo Doma, comes crashing 100 miles an hour down. Like he has someone outside of him to make a play, but he doesn't. He comes crashing. Who's taking care of that play? You know, we've seen it. I haven't broken that down. I'm not breaking this down for the. But that's what's puzzling to me are some of these plays. And if that's going to be the case, then I'm doing whoever for these last three games. I'm running. You know, you could do the reverse. You could do the fake trap pitch type stuff. You're getting all that heavy that flow. I don't know. That's just it's puzzling to me within the scheme. Who you always have to have someone playing it not safe, but you know, just in case. You know, something comes back, but that hasn't been the case.
Bell comes in motion. Somebody's got to come with him, right?
Yeah, they're in man-to-man. So from a secondary standpoint, I get the rotation, right? As do you. But coaches, good coaches or, you know, fundamental sound defensive philosophy never says 11 hats to the ball. It's usually always 10 because you have a counter boot reverse guy or a CBR guy who's always responsible for backside flow. And whatever, however it is you coach it, play away, don't cross opposite A, whatever your little rules are. The backside run fits have eluded Nebraska almost all year. Now, we talked about this, I believe it was maybe after the Minnesota game where I said, you know, sometimes in practice, the backside run fits are the hardest to see because when you don't go good on good a ton, those plays don't get to you when you're going against the competition squad. You usually beat them at the point of attack, and you're making plays in the backfield, and so you kind of get a false sense of security. And so I said, gosh, you know, Nebraska really may have to go back to the basics where you almost stop the ball mid-play or use no ball and really walk through backside fits, because I don't think they're getting an accurate visual in practice, because oftentimes, again, with that type of competition, you're not seeing the, hey, who's the backside honey hole guy, or who fits off this backside guy, or if you don't get full side flow and you get a cutback, like, where are we, you know, from a run fit standpoint? And we've seen that time and time again kind of rear its ugly head against Nebraska. It has been cutback runs and things against the grain. So you can go back to real basics and slow down those backside run fits, or you can play a little bit more zone where you can get eyes off of men and start focusing more on keys where guys aren't as flow heavy, because you're basically just moving a few adjusters.
And let's make sure we give credit to Jeff Brohm for calling that. I mean, think about that play. That ball
could be
fumbled. It could be a big loss. They still had a chance for the field goal, but that's a gutsy play. And he was a pretty good play caller all game, right? I mean, he put Nebraska in some issues.
Yeah, they did. Again, you attack the linebackers in coverage, the crossing routes, still struggling to pass those off. But, yeah, he calls a timeout, makes a change. Nebraska stays in what he saw previously. Makes that call. He said they ran it all week in practice. They liked the look against what Nebraska does in the red zone. It was a thing of beauty. I mean, he walked right into the end zone. They got to clean some stuff up to make sure those plays don't happen anymore.
And a hotly contested play, and I'm glad Jay's doing it inside the huddle, so make sure you guys stay tuned for that. But I thought that one, I talked about that one on Sunday, I talked about it on our show, where kind of got to give the devil his due. Formation-wise, I really liked what Purdue did with the stack wide receivers to the field. You get JoJo displaced, Lamar's to the boundary. You have a deep hole guy, or a safety deep hole by, he's 15 yards off the ball, almost in a one high, and they bring motion back. That is a really nice play design for how Nebraska likes to play defense. And sometimes we always talk about what the team that we cheer for is or isn't. Now, you got to give Purdue a little bit of credit. They had a third-string quarterback prepared to go. They didn't lay down. They didn't quit. I think did a fantastic job of scheming. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to tip your cap, knowing full well that a couple things can be true at once. You can give credit to Purdue for design, but you know, as Nebraska, you can get better at the little things.
And then in the first half, Nebraska had several goal line plays where they didn't necessarily use quarterback run. Well, they didn't use Dedrick Mills a lot. That comes back to having confidence that you can line up with your running back and score a touchdown, right? Second half, they did a better job, but those red zone plays, just most of them didn't work out.
Yeah, it's tough. I've Dame is in the coaching business. You start a game, you get some calls. As a play caller, you install, you make some calls to say, okay, how's this? How you get a feel of it? And they struggled to run the ball inside early. You saw a lot of more bubble screens outside. I mean, Dedrick Mills was catching passes on the edge, and you just get down there and you try. You know, sure they had the shovel pass Wondell. I mean, it's a block, it's one block away.
Sure,
but you say that for a lot of plays, it's always one block away. The linebacker sheds off a Farniak and makes the play. You know, you get the misread RPO, I think, out to the flat. And then you're in shock a little bit. You haven't punched it in two plays. And I just, as a play caller, when you know you can't execute simple things, you're stuck. You don't know what to do. And I think sometimes you can overthink it, and you lose a little bit of trust. And I think that's what happened in that scenario.
Yeah, you heard me say after the famous Sam Darnold video where he said, I'm seeing ghosts out there. Everybody that's played the game, and even coaches, you know why those guys didn't make fun of what he said? Because it's true. Sam Darnold just said it out loud. And sometimes when you lose your confidence or things like that happen early in a game and you're trying to not only protect your team's psyche, but also give yourself a good chance to win. There are times where coaches and play callers can see ghosts too. And lack of early success in the game or lack of early season success in similar situations can sometimes cause you to get outside yourself as a play caller.
17 swing passes and or screen passes. Now, most of them were complete. They only had 3 incompletes out of that. Is that the core of the offense now?
Well, this is just my philosophy, and everybody will tell you something different. And with the RPO game that is based on, you know, putting those defenders, those number 2 defenders in conflict, I think without the R, it is very hard to get the PO. So I'm a guy that likes to body blow. Inside run game, inside run game. Didn't matter who it was, whether it was Royce Freeman, QB run game, pick your poison.
LaMichael James.
In Orlando, yeah. LaMichael James. It was always the inside run game that was kind of the catalyst. It's anytime you run a version of the triple, without a good fullback or inside run game, you don't really have triple. And I think Nebraska either has to revisit the philosophy or be more patient with the body blows.
We'll get back to more what needs to be done during the bye week. But now it's time to revisit the tape. Check out the highlights from Saturday's game at Purdue. No matter how many times you watch it, Nebraska ends up losing in the end. It was a blustery day out there. It was a cold day. I know because my wife was in the stands sending me texts complaining. There's another swing pass right there early on to Dedrick Mills with a nice run there after the catch. And then this play on 4th and 6. This is a ballsy play by Scott Frost, right?
Yeah, good call. Gutsy call on 4th and 6. And a big boy throw. Gets outside the pocket. He's decisive with the delivery.
And here's Dedrick Mills getting carries early in the game. A touchdown there to go up 7-0 later in the game. Probably could ask the question about why they didn't run that. That's his 8th touchdown, by the way, on the season for Dedrick Mills. Jack Plummer, who had a pretty decent day, not right here. Dream for a defensive
lineman? Absolutely. Big boy carrying that rock. He looked nice, man. I'd like to see him tuck it away a little bit. I was a little worried he was going to fumble it. But, man, I know if he could have got in there, that would have been sweet. But, no, good play by Mr. Daniels there.
Yeah, then after 2 plays, you have this 3rd down run by Adrian Martinez. Gets down to the 1. Were you surprised they kicked the field goal, Damon?
A little bit, you know, and I heard what he said in the presser, and I'm just telling you, I think that kind of reiterates what I say. The regular, the normal, the confident Scott Frost probably doesn't kick that field goal at the 1, but I think trying to protect his team's psyche, he thought the 2 scores would be paramount at that point.
Up 10-0, about to go up 17-0. Will Rout gets interception ball thrown to the safety there, but Nebraska comes back. The much maligned Lamar Jackson making a one-handed interception here to get the ball back. Another time when Nebraska started in plus territory, but again, did not get a score out of it. And then, of course, Purdue comes in as one of the worst running teams in the Big Ten, and King DeRue actually had a pretty decent day, 15 carries for 71 yards. This is one of his longest ones here, a 25-yard run. Jack Plummer also had a pretty good day in terms of throwing the ball before he got knocked out. This one is to Milton Wright. Milton Wright had 4 catches for 69 yards on the day, getting down there inside the 20-yard line. And this is something they did really well. Ball thrown behind the line of scrimmage so you can block downfield, right?
Yeah, and those guys did a really good job of getting a hat on a hat. They were pretty sticky. And Nebraska has had a tendency to be a little bit Velcro, so that's a good match right there.
Here's something they did all day long, getting the ball to the tight end. Big plays, 8 catches for 97 yards to Hopkins there. And then Plummer, this is a tough one. You missed that sack. You can see how frustrated
I mean, that's just frustrating because, like I said, it's not one thing, it's the other. You finally get there, but you don't get him down. He scrambles for 20.
Yeah, and you can see Alex Davis frustrated at the end not getting that sack. Here's the backup tight end. This is just, you got to make these tackles.
Yeah, too many. I mean, the 2 plays earlier, this play was on social media a little bit as well. You gotta finish. You gotta get them down. People are gonna get open, but you gotta get them down right away and then rally. But they're struggling to do that.
J.D. Spielman again had a huge day, catching another one of those swing passes. This actually ended in a personal foul call as well to get Nebraska even closer. And then you have Adrian Martinez swinging the ball out to Wandell Robinson. Did not get points though on this drive. This is another one where maybe they get touchdown opposed to a field goal.
Yeah, and you're kicking yourself because you just feel like you're leaving points out there on the field, and eventually they add up.
Yep. Now going into the 4th quarter as Nebraska's trailing 17-13, I mentioned J.D. Spielman on the day. 6 catches, 123 yards. Big day for him getting his feet in with that one.
That's a fantastic throw on the move.
And then Adrian Martinez got his run game going in the 4th quarter. He ended up having 12 rushes for 58 yards and those 2 touchdowns, including that nice run there. And then they come with touchdown. This is what we expect to see more in the red zone?
Yeah, I thought you'd see this early. I think it's a way to level the playing field when it shrinks inside the green zone or the red zone for the offense. It's always about playing 11 on 11.
Nebraska gets the lead 20-17. Jack Plummer made some big throws, including this one here on 3rd down, a chance to stop them on 3rd and 6. Couldn't get it done. And then back with King Drew. This is the play, I believe, that they're going to break down coming up in our huddle breakdown. Then another run inside as well for King DeRue getting the touchdown to put Purdue back up 24-20. I mentioned the day that J.D. Spielman had. He had 2 catches, 1 for 40 and 1 for 42. This is the 1 for 42. This is a nice catch by him.
It is. Ball's a little high. He goes to get it. He makes the adjustment. And he's hard to bring down. He was determined. He's been feisty the last couple of weeks. There's no doubt he wants to win.
How about Dedrick Mills' block here on the defensive end?
Yeah, he's fantastic, especially for a guy that they got away from a little bit in terms of feeding him. Found another way to eat, and that was as a lead blocker.
He stayed in the game. Plummer gets knocked out of the game. In comes the backup quarterback, Aiden O'Connell, and he looked great on this drive.
That's a tough throw, man. That's a money throw, and he made it.
Yeah, they figured out a way to get the ball at a tight end very well. Again, 6-for-6 on this drive to get down there. And here's the play, Damon. What do you see on this play?
Tell you what, man-to-man motion. We get down to dive with the outside player. No backside contained right out the back gate. That's an easy six.
Devin Bell scores that one. That is the play of the day by Bell scoring that touchdown. Nebraska has a shot. 4th and 3. Ball gets knocked down at the line of scrimmage. They would have had J.D. Spielman. Wando Robinson was knocked out of the game. Couldn't be in there. Nebraska ends up losing the game. I mentioned this to Damon a couple times. On 4 drives, 47 plays, 345 yards out of that 449 that Purdue had on just those 4 drives. And Nebraska wins the battle in terms of the turnovers, has the block punts, and in terms of penalties as well, but somehow managed to still lose the game.
Mm.
Time to go back and look a little bit deeper inside the playbook. Here's Jay Moore in the huddle.
Okay, so we saw this clip earlier. We talked about it. I've talked about it at depth on social media, Twitter. Diagnosis play with Scott Shanley, Jay Foreman, former linebackers. So I thought it'd be take a time. We got a few extra minutes today to really dive in to try to teach a little more about numbers, how it works within versus the offense, what the offense is trying to do. Just really try to break it down because this always comes down with this team right now is little things, alignment, assignment, diagnosing plays, doing your job, and they still struggle to do that. So when you look at the numbers game right now, you break this down. I'm not counting the QB into this. A lot of times the QB doesn't get count into the numbers game. When he does in the run game, that's where it kind of makes it difficult on the defense. But Nebraska's in good situation down here to the bottom. This is where the play's going to go. They're up top. They're matched up well. So obviously Purdue in this situation with formation into the field, they got to do something to level it out, give themselves a better advantage. So as I let this play go, you can kind of see what they do. They bring the tight end down. But I get the end zone shot, which is the best shot to view football. Now we can really break it down. So this is what they're going to do: down blocks, tackle guard. They're going to double here on to Stilley. Seal out. They're going to do a full block from the tight end here to get back to a better number situation for Purdue. Now, what Nebraska is going to end up doing in this situation, they're going to run a little run stunt. They're going to have Davis come down, take the A-gap. Moe's going to come out, take the C. And Nelson has to come down crashing hard to replace that B-gap in this situation. So as we play, we can see when this full block comes from the tight end, Nelson has to get inside this block. He should be showing color right here, taking up that B gap. He doesn't. Now, in the situation, you have two guys in the same gap. Right here, now you have two guys in the C gap. This is a mess. This is bad. Now you go back to this side. Essentially, you have two guys doing the same thing in this area. With that full block from the tight end, Colin Miller has to get back over top. Colin Miller should be right here to help out in the numbers game. They need that free hitter. They don't have that guy. So now, as you break it down, Colin should be here. Nelson should be here. This play should bounce out to Mo Berry and to Eric Lee, who's kind of sitting up here. It shouldn't be. Maybe they get 4 or 5 yards. It's not a 20-yard gain. It's the little things, again, with this defense. And the last thing, when I talk about defense and the little things, technically Davis did his job. He took the A-gap, but I always say you're doing your job, but you can do it better. He needs to fight pressure here better. I don't like the way he finishes this. It kind of gives me a little window into how their mentality is defensively. To me, this is lazy. It's sloppy. He gets crossed over. He gets pushed out. He's a non-factor into this play. Technically, he did his job, but he did not do his job good enough. And when you have those things going on with the defense, that's how you become 4-8 and you lose to a 2-6 team like Purdue. So hopefully they can get this cleaned up the last few games of the year.
Jay, you mentioned everybody doing their jobs. Is the defense at that point where if everyone doesn't do their job, you're going to get a 17-yard play? I mean, is that what we're talking about for the defense?
Yeah, if you're going to do some run stunts like that and take some chances, yeah. But that's what it comes down to. I mean, they got scholarship players too.
Yeah.
You have to be on point. If you're going to be aggressive like that, everyone has to, all 11 guys have to do their job. Otherwise, you're going to get gashed for 20 yards.
We'll talk more about those plays, but we've got to take a break. We come back. Friend of the show, former Husker, Blake Lawrence, who always has good sock game. He'll be with us tonight. Before that, some sights from a cloudy day in Indiana, courtesy of Hail Varsity. Stay with us. We're back soon. Welcome back to Big Red Wrap-Up. I'm Michael Sevier, joined by our NET intern, Hannah. What you got for us social media-wise?
We've got a lot of good stuff for you tonight, but our first tweet is from Meg, talking about that amazing 34-yard catch by Kanai Vainoa. And it was a great catch. And
I know a guy. That's good.
Yeah, it was a good joke by her. Yeah. And she said, well, she'll be here all day for the jokes, but she might not make it through that game if she has a heart attack because of how stressful that would have been for her.
No doubt.
And then our second tweet is from Amon's Liquor Store saying that it's not been so great that the Huskers have been struggling this season, but business has been booming. So good for Amon.
Good for them.
And then our last tweet is from Austin, who's saying that he did a half marathon, the Good Life Halfsie, this past Sunday without any training, just because he needed some thrill in his life after this kind of sad season the Huskers have been having.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Doesn't help the team out.
No, doesn't help him. I hope it went well for him.
I hope so, too. Yeah. Thank you, Hannah. We appreciate it. We've got, of course, two winners again this week in our weekly game day photo contest. Our first photo comes from Michael, who shows off his daughter and granddaughter at the Purdue game. Oh, what a nice picture. And then also, it's a late birthday, by the way, for Sarah, who turned 2 October 31st. Second photo comes from John, who felt lucky to have his emotional support dog by his side following Nebraska loss. And as Damon will tell you, we could all use an emotional support animal following these games now. Both Michael and John won the new Big Red Wrap-Up T-shirt, coffee tumbler, as well as a 2019 Hail Varsity yearbook. Send us your best game day photo each Saturday for your chance to win these great prizes. And join, we're very excited, the former Husker, Blake Lawrence. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Great to be back. Yeah. Happy to see you guys. And I was told that I would only come back to discuss a victory that's in the contract. But again, I'm getting really good at talking about bad Nebraska football and on this stage, so I feel right at home.
Well, it's perfect to have a former linebacker here. We were talking a lot about linebacker and the responsibilities of those linebackers. What have you seen so far this season?
I would say that I think there's a lot of the scheme, and we were just talking about this, the 3-4 defense is something that you're trying to understand where guys are supposed to be and breaking down just gap assignment. But it, really, there are times when you look at the numbers aren't there. And when you slow down the plays and you see guys out of position, that's a scheme thing, and sometimes it's execution, where the eyes are for the linebackers being confident. But I like the way that JoJo Doman plays football. I would have loved to play with that guy, and I know that he plays with some fire under him. And knowing his family and the way that he approaches it and the things that he's come through, it's really great to see him play at that level. And I think that he can rub off on some players as he's leading the team on the defense side, just from an energy standpoint.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So this question comes every week. Should they be playing the 4-3 then? If the 3-4 seems so complicated and it's so much responsibilities and the number concerns?
I don't know if it's as much a complication thing. I think, you know, from a technique standpoint, I guess I should probably defer to the two defensive guys, but having your eyes in the right place. I mean, Blake walked over and knew right away, hey, 4-3-3-4, listen, tight end, short motion, I'm that backside linebacker. My eyes immediately go to that tight end. Like, that's just kind of 101.
The tight end's going to take you
to play. That doesn't matter if you're playing old school Okie, you're in dime, you're in nickel. Like, that's really just football right there. And those are the kinds of things that I think sometimes just leave you
scratching. And I think with this defense right now, 3-4-4-3, I think as in a linebacker situation, a 3-4, it can be kind of murky because guys are two-gapping. But I think right now they're trying to make it pretty clear for those guys, getting some movement. Hey, he's got A, he's got B, you got C. Or he's taking A right now. They're trying to make it clear-cut for him. But then you have other guys, and you have a Garrett Nelson that doesn't spill. You don't have a backside contained player. You don't have. It's just this team is tripping over themselves on the details and the little things. I mean, it's whether it's a 3-4, there's certain foundations of playing good defense, no matter what fronts that you play. Mm-hmm. It's alignment, and it's assignment, and it's knowing your job, every call. These guys got to get better at a play is called. You have to, whether offense, defense, you get a play is called. You go through that Rolodex in your head, okay, what could I see? What are right. my checks? But initially, what are my keys? Mm-hmm. You have to, and I just don't know if they're doing that right now. Things may be moving too quick for them, but 4-3-3-4, you still got to do your job.
I kind of asked this question before we went to break, but this one from Marv and Lincoln. Last few games, I noticed the offense is predictable with the swing pass. I'm not sure if this is the offense that Scott Frost wants to run in the Big Ten. What do you guys think?
I would say that Scott is figuring out the Big Ten is going to bring a different level of intensity on the defensive side that he didn't have to face in the Pac-12. He didn't have to face in the AAC. And I think that's a compliment to the Big Ten. I think that that goes across the board for not just Scott, but for the fan bases. You know, we are in the mix of the Big Ten, and this is when we observed the Big Ten from the Big 12 seats. And we saw these close games week in, week out, guys beating each other up. I mean, Nebraska's in the thick of that. That's the definition of Big Ten football, and now we can't look at it as a surprise that we're, you know, several, almost a decade into the Big Ten, and we're still playing close games. And Frost is having to adjust to maybe some types of schemes or intensity that, again, you said they got scholarship guys too. So it doesn't look like there's a lot of comfort this year compared to the tail end of last year in terms of the offense and the confidence in the play calling. And you try and pick certain things of what that is. There's injuries or literally the confidence in the locker room or amongst teammates or throw it against the Big Ten intensity. But overall, you can see us all trying to point a finger at what you think this would be.
All you guys played, obviously. At any point, you can be benched. We've had 3 or 4 questions here. If guys aren't playing to the level what they're supposed to be playing or they're missing plays, why aren't they benching those guys? Tough question.
It is hard. This team isn't very deep. I mean, you just can't throw in. Sometimes you can't throw into a true freshman. I think you are still trying to salvage the season. I think I don't know. We don't know how guys are practicing Monday through Friday behind them. You'd like to be able to, but I just don't think you can. I mean, you can't. Who else are they going to put in that linebacker? I don't. You know, who else are they going to be able to put in there? They don't have the guys. It's you can do some stuff D line if some guys mess. They have some depth. Maybe secondary. They're not as deep without Deontay Williams back there. It's a nice thing to be able to think you're able to do, but I just don't think they're at liberty to do so right now.
Yeah, and that big part we're not seeing what's happening in practice, right? They're putting the best guys on the field to win the games.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure they want to win.
At least. 99.9.
And I think they're trying to play the guys that give them the best chance to win. And I'm not saying, listen, the coaches are always right. Because sometimes there's this fine line between, okay, what do I see Monday through Friday versus what may be a feel and who may be able to make some plays for me on Saturday. Sometimes you don't have good practice players. And those guys are pretty good gamers. Now, coaches are very reluctant to let that go because it sets bad precedent, especially depending on what type of culture you're trying to build. So it's always a fine line, and you got to know your team's psyche. Some guys, if you bench, and I know, listen, guys watching and will say, well, then you don't need them, but it's not that easy. And sometimes guys you bench, you know you're not getting back anytime soon emotionally. So you better go ahead and figure that one out, too.
Yeah.
It's not just as easy as, bring me on the next guy, because those will be the same people complaining next week, too.
Same people complaining that Adrian Martinez isn't as good as he was his freshman year. They obviously have tape on him. He's been hurt. What do you think about the way you've seen Adrian Martinez so far this year?
I'm still on team Adrian Martinez. I think he's got all the tools and the potential to put Nebraska in the best position to win the Big Ten West each of the next 2 years. And I think that confidence that I have in him goes beyond just this is knowing competitors, knowing players that when you see such a high ceiling, there's no reason to doubt that he can't get back there. I think that there's a lot of things that are going through his mind. And you said, there's tape on him, right? Last year, Adrian Martinez was a surprise in everything that he did. And now, you know, if you can stop number two, you can stop Nebraska. You can put them in position to have to use their other tools, which there are other, you know, tools that you can go to, the Spielmans and Wandales, but in general, he is the guy. I still am confident in what he's doing. He's just got to get back into that rhythm.
DB, Jerry doesn't want them talking to the press anymore. He doesn't want anybody talking to the press.
I said that, so I'm Team Jerry. Guys laugh at me all the time. Remember, I'm the guy that said, man, I watched Taylor Martinez struggle years ago and was not comfortable talking to the press. And I was like, shut him down. Like, he's obviously not comfortable dealing with the media and everybody. Oh, no, you can't do that. That's court. Like, says who? Like, if we're about the student-athlete experience and doing what's best for the university, sometimes guys just shouldn't talk. And I don't have any problems with that.
Doesn't talk to the media.
I don't have any problems with not making coordinators accessible. And I know, blasphemy, you're in the media. But listen, I'm all for functional success. And if that helps guys be more dialed in and pay better attention to detail, knock yourself out.
I want to talk about something that year two under a new coach, new system, new scheme, and take you back to Bo Pelini's second year. It's 2009. It's 10 years ago, right? And there was at one point in the season, we were 4-1. We had lost by 1 point to Virginia Tech. We were playing close. And then we lost at home to Texas Tech. We lost by 21 points, and then we lost again by 2 points. Remember this like
9-7,
and all of a sudden we were 4-3. But like these were all close games at the end that we had a chance to win, and we didn't. We didn't win those close games. Then you go to Texas in the Big 12 championship game, like, and so there was those moments. Like, you know, we lost four games that year that they were all close, while the Texas Tech wasn't. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't any doubt in our minds that this was the exact coach and system we want to play for, the exact team we wanted to be on. There was no doubt in that locker room that we were doing it right.
And you went and beat the heck out of Arizona.
And we went and beat the heck out of, we also had a Heisman. You know, we had the number one defense in the country. Yep. I mean, so we had something that we could hang our hat on if only we'd have had a better quarterback. You know, things like that. But there was no doubt that, yeah, we were losing some games, that we're going to win that game next year. And that was the mentality. And I wonder if in this locker room, they say, yeah, we lost to Purdue, we're going to win that game next year. Right? Versus, oh, woe is me, here it comes again. You know, and like that is what happened in 2007 that tarnished the locker room.
Yeah.
2009, those close games, like, we're not losing these games in the future, not at Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. PTSD. Right. Coach Tremaine.
Yeah.
You certainly have it.
Yeah. With this team, I think they have it right now.
Yeah.
Against some of these situations. Well, and I think
three of these losses
I can say that as a player going from year one of Cal into year two, you got in some scenarios, you're like, here we go again.
Yeah.
But somehow we got out of them. You know, you just fought, like, we just focus on doing what we were told and what we were taught to do. And you make that progression. That's what's puzzling about this team. They're not making these progressions you see through nine games. But this team definitely, defensively, I think, has some PTSD with getting a stop.
Message from Facebook for you, Damon. What can the offense hang their hat on right now?
So that's, in my opinion, that's the number one problem with what's going on offensively. That's why next week we should do Inside the Huddle and do the shovel pass, because conceptually that play was pretty sound. Now, you did have a guy play across a guy's face, but if Adrian holds the ball one more full second or runs, either one of those guys walk in, right, as a run-pass option. So I see what Coach Frost sees, why they got in position to have to run the shovel pass, because he didn't feel like he had any place to hang his hat and coat. Okay, this is what we do well, so let me scheme. Mm-hmm. And when you don't feel like you have any place to hang your hat, you'll put that thing anywhere. That's a good spot, or that's a good spot. And I think that's what you're seeing with this offense. The scariest thing to me at this juncture of year two is if I asked everybody up here, what is the identity of this offense? I'm all but going to guess we get four different answers. So that's the part that they've got to answer. You want to be a zone team? Do you want to be, when you go, you want to go power spread? You want to go QB run game spread? It's not just simply about getting in the gun and having a bunch of fakes. It's a mentality, and it's a concept. We haven't seen a repeatable concept because I don't think they feel comfortable with predicting outcomes.
Last thing, Blake, what do you do during this bye week? How do you get this team prepared to play maybe the biggest game of the year now against Wisconsin?
You have the rest that comes with the bye week is a good thing. I think that the game that went into the bye week, everyone was in their misery, and then he came out and lost two more games, and he doubled down the misery. So there's got to be a lot of getting the team back up and understanding, like, going back to the basics, the roots of why we're here, what this program stands for, and some of that camaraderie. Then I think there's part of this is that, you know, Wisconsin's going to play great defense. Oh, yeah. You know that you're going to maybe have to scheme and maybe recreate an identity. And that to me is something that hopefully there's spending time on doubling down on things that have had success up to this point. So they're not trying to create a new identity going into one of the best defenses in the country. That's the type of things you would hope they're doing in a bye week.
We appreciate it. Next time, we guarantee you come on. It's after a win.
Hey, that's the plan. And I brought the sock game.
Yeah.
I see you got...
What'd you go with?
I got the... this is Mario right here. You know, just level up.
Level up. There you go. Level up. That's all you got to do. Yeah, you got to do. That mushroom would make you bigger. I know how that is. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. Next up, Sean Callahan will join us with an update on Big Red recruiting. As we go to break, though, one last look from Saturday's game, courtesy of images from Hail Varsity. We're back after this. Welcome back. I'm Michael Sevier. He's Sean Callahan. Let's talk some recruiting. I know the big question from people, you're losing like this. How's it affecting recruiting?
Well, right now it hasn't really affected anything, but, you know, it will be interesting to watch because there are some key targets that there's going to be a lot of coaching changes happening in college football. We know Florida State obviously has already changed. So with these big coaching changes, there's going to be your recruits maybe getting poked at, maybe reached out to more. And it happens even if you're having a good season. You're going to still have your recruits talk to. But the early signing day does change things a lot when you look at it because guys just don't have as much time. I mean, you look at like Logan Smothers and Turner Corcoran. Both these guys are four-star recruits that enroll early. They've got long-standing relationships with this Nebraska staff. What you hope is those relationships will win out in the end because Nebraska has been recruiting a guy like Smothers for 2 years and obviously a guy like Corcoran for well over a year. Those relationships, I think, are going to be very, very big as this season kind of gets to the end.
Nebraska's had a lot of luck in Florida so far getting ready for this class. Taman Lyman out of Orlando, another defensive back. What about
Taman Lyman, you know, you go back to a year ago, Nebraska got shut out in the state of Florida in 19, after a really strong year in 18. He was the first guy of a few they've gotten out of Florida, but a long, rangy corner. Fits the profile of athlete that Travis Fisher wants. He's from, you know, the Tallahassee, Florida area himself, so he likes those Florida guys that have the versatility that can play multiple positions. And as you know, there's a lot of turnover coming up in the secondary when you look at the players playing right now. A lot of juniors, a lot of seniors, and they're trying to get it going. But he's got the ability and the versatility to play a lot of spots in the back end.
We talk a lot about the key to getting everything turned around. In-state talent, Avante Dickerson, 2021, all the speed in the world. Where do you see him playing at the next level?
Yeah, you look at Avante Dickerson now on our in-state profile here tonight, and you know, he's probably a corner. But, you know, he's a guy that could play a lot of positions. He's only playing corner and running back right now in the high school ranks. LSU, Ohio State have already offered. Nebraska, obviously, has offered him.
What's his fastest 40?
4.3s, 4.4s.
And out of camp.
As a freshman going into his sophomore year of high school, he ran the best 40 and jumped the highest vertical at Nebraska's summer camp at that age. So, you know, we've seen some really good young players in this state emerge in recent years, maybe younger than ever. And in my time covering recruiting, you look at Teddy Prochaska and how he emerged as a freshman, sophomore type guy. Cameron Juergens, when he was offered as a freshman. Avante Dickerson's in that same boat. And it's becoming more the norm, I think, because I think kids are training and developing more than, say, 15, 20 years ago, where performance training and other things weren't out there. But Dickerson can run, he can jump. For LSU to come to Nebraska, and Bill Bush being there has played a factor. He's a Pender, Nebraska native. He coaches the secondary, so he does come back to Nebraska. His wife lives in Lincoln, so he has a reason to come back and forth and recruit here as well when he's back home. And you know, I think that's one of the reasons LSU already came in with an offer. He says Florida, though, is his dream offer. So will the Gators come in and offer a kid? They did offer, I think, not Sean Fisher. They made an offer in Nebraska recently, but it's rare to see Florida come into Nebraska. They don't need to.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you, Sean. We appreciate it. Be sure to vote on this week's sideline survey question. What has been the most disappointing aspect so far of the 2019 season? We've got the offense, the defense, special teams, and coaching. As you can see right now, the offense leading 39%. And then you have coaching at 36%, defense at 24%, special teams only 1%. All right, guys, bye week. What does Nebraska got to do? What do they have to do to be ready for that Wisconsin game coming up?
I am going good on good. I'm honestly, I'm separating the O-line and D-line, and I'm doing like an hour of individual.
Yeah, just working angle blocks and pin and pull.
And like
angle blocks,
straight,
pin and
pull. Straight, flat, getting down to foundations, because this, you got this game's won up front, and they got to play better up front. And it's an hour of just, it's going to be miserable for them, but they got to get better there.
Explain pin and pull block.
So, covered, uncovered, and pin and pull is basically you work outside in for the offensive line, and it's about creating angles. So the pin is the guy that's on the outside is going to pin you down, mm-hmm. and the puller is the guy that's uncovered that's going to pull around.
Right.
That is the whole pet baby of what Wisconsin does. It is all about creating angles mm-hmm. and running seams. It doesn't have near the creativity maybe that traditional zone would. But for me, this one isn't about X's and O's. This is about recognition and fight. Fight pressure with pressure. And by that, I mean you feel a guy heavy on your shoulder, push back, don't give, and understand that there's a reason you don't meet anybody on the path of least resistance. Nobody takes that way.
Right?
Right?
Be like water.
And you've got to meet it right where they're at.
Next three games, obviously, three biggest games of the season now. Wisconsin, a team that Nebraska hasn't beaten since 2012. Maryland, trip out to College Park. And then, of course, Iowa, who Nebraska hasn't beaten since 2014. If you can somehow get two of these, you go to a bowl, you think it's likely? I open it up to you, Sean.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
I mean, I think Maryland is likely, but you still worry about, they've got guys on offense that could give Nebraska a lot of problems at quarterback, at running back, at tight end, et cetera. And we've seen teams do that the last few weeks to the Huskers. And then obviously Wisconsin's going to have the same issues. Iowa, it just has the feel of a game that Nebraska could maybe pull an upset with emotion. But I think they have to get one win maybe against Maryland, raise the stakes of that Iowa game and go into that game with more of a reason to want to get that win. Because if they go into Iowa with four wins, it's just going to be an awfully, awfully tough day or tough atmosphere in that stadium, I think.
With arguably the craziest thought of the night, I don't think Wisconsin is...
They're not unbeatable, obviously.
That's exactly what
right.
I was going to say. And with Nebraska, when you know that your biggest problem is more emotional than it is physical, you're still in control of that. And you've got to find a way to make Cohn the guy that beats you
yep.
and to answer the dinner bell when it rings. There's nothing wrong with meeting passion with passion and let the rest sort itself out. All this minutia and background noise of pin and pull or, you know, are we one gapping or two gapping or am I going to wrong arm spill? At the end of the day, am I going to lay it on the line and see what happens? If you can't get to that point, I don't care if you ask me to run down Dodge Street backwards, hit O Street sideways. I'm not buying it if I can't get myself there emotionally.
Yeah, and Wisconsin's going to come right at you.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to try to push you around early, try to take your heart away from you. It's even bigger having this week off. Getting prepared for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like I said, it's what you see is what you're going to get. They don't try to disguise it.
Right.
Them in Iowa, it's a thing of beauty watching O-line work, how the unison. It's just like playing the piano, man. It's a thing.
And one team flows.
And it's two distinct ways to skin a cat. You get the pin and pull philosophy mm-hmm. of Wisconsin, and you get the zone. Stepping
Dancing
in
Bears.
Sync uh-huh. with Iowa, but both teams are physical and powerful.
Yeah, I don't think the nice thing would be Nebraska's trying to do some things exotic. We broke down the stunts. I don't know if necessarily you have to do that against Wisconsin, but you just line up and say, hey, we're going to get you in our foundation, our base, our stuff that we nail day in and day out over bye week, and we're going to play it tough. Maybe we'll bring some stuff. We have some stuff dialed up for you, sure. But we're going to have our four or five guys up front try to go toe-to-toe, which I think they can do. I mean, they can play the run good. It's just at times they try to trick it up a little too much and out-scheme themselves.
Go ahead, Sean.
I think, you know, the next 3 weeks are really more about Martinez. I mean, if he can raise his game up to the guy we thought he was going to be, I think everybody else raises up with that. And guys are open. I mean, when you watch Nebraska's offense, guys are open. He's missing them. He's got to make some of those throws. He's got to run like he ran late in that game against Purdue versus early in that game. They've got to be, I think, more courageous with the run calls. I thought they held back with the run calls, Michael, at Purdue early on in that game, and then they turned him loose in the second half. You know, a couple of those red zone runs in the first half might have broken that game open and they win the game instead of the shovel pass and the sack play. But, yeah, I just think Martinez the next couple of weeks is going to be really – if they play well, it's all going to be – a lot of it's going to be on him.
And we didn't know the health of the other quarterbacks. We knew Luke McCaffrey wasn't there. Vedro had been hurt, maybe missed some practice. Maybe you hold Adrian back a little early because you just don't want to get him hurt.
Yeah, that may have factored in, right, where you're kind of back in that bubble wrap mentality, and you just never know what a coach is thinking. There's that emotional connection there between a play caller and his quarterback, and sometimes you want to keep a guy safe, but it's not just physically.
Mm-hmm.
It's emotionally too. So I think both – or everybody involved has to make the commitment that, hey, we're gonna cut the strings, let this thing rip. Mm-hmm. And then again, whatever happens, happens. There may be failure. But sometimes the toughest guy in the room is the one that's willing to get beat up. It's not the one that wins the fight. And sometimes, guys, you just have to be willing to go there.
Yeah, sometimes you got to be willing to lose. Sam asked the question to you, Jay. He says, can Nebraska, are they good enough to play man in the red zone? Should they be more in zone?
Ooh, it's tough. You know, there's different philosophies. You know, I came from a defense in the NFL. They love playing like a cover two, corners stay. They don't go with motion. Mm-hmm. In the red zone. That was our kind of philosophy. But some people do like the man. It's hard because you get so condensed. You can pick each other off down there. But then again, you play the zone and you're kind of sitting back, and then it's hard to rally to make a play in some areas that we saw when Nebraska struggles to make tackles, and especially on that one that we saw earlier. I would like to say, yeah, they should be able to do man, but I don't know what they're being taught in that scenario. I don't know what Travis Fisher's telling them.
We want to see more zone?
I'm kind of a matchup guy where underneath I would play with guys playing zone with my second level guys. And you'd have a couple rules. Anything vertical, listen, I'm man, I'm locked. Anything outside release, I'm locked. So I'd kind of still go concept with that, like combo. But Jay's right. You get a hole thrower or a window thrower, some of those guys can pick you apart
playing
zone.
Yeah.
But in a day and age where you get rubs, you get crosses, and you get traffic where you cannot touch receivers, man, it's tough.
Sean, about 20 seconds. What about Wisconsin in terms of visitors? It'll be a big visitor weekend?
Yeah, a lot will depend on the kickoff of the game. You know, it's a shot of an 11 a.m. game, so that would make it tough. Junior college guys, though, their season will be ending here soon. So we've tracked 16 offers Nebraska's made to JUCO guys this year. Eight of them already guys committed elsewhere. So
all outside linebackers?
We got D-line, too. Yeah, East Mississippi State. And got,
big body wide receivers, outside linebackers, defensive linemen. I think they need to get 2 to 3 JUCOs possibly in this class if they can get a good one. I mean, you can't just take a guy to take a guy.
No doubt. Thanks, Sean. Of course, the Huskers have their second bye week of the season. We will continue to bring you all the information you need and move the show in a positive direction. We're not resting on our laurels. We're back next week to discuss the bye week and look ahead to the final three games, starting with Wisconsin. Former Huskers Josh Banderas and Brandon Riley will join us. We also have the NSAA Fall Championship starting this Saturday on NET. The 2019 NSAA Volleyball Championships from the Bob Devaney Sports Center. Tune in beginning at 9 a.m. and continue throughout the day as we crown 6 champions on the court. Our thanks to Sean Callahan, Blake Lawrence, Hannah, and the boys in the call center as well. For Jay Moore and Damon Benning, I'm Michael Sevier. We'll see you next week on NET's Big Red Wrap-Up.